Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia for this Tuesday, June 6th in Hong Kong, Monday, June 5th in New York. And coming up today,
the SEC accuses Binance and its CEO of breaking U.S. securities rules.
Apple debuts its mixed reality headset.
And China Evergrande's property management unit posts a profit for 2022.
Former Vice President Mike Pence files paperwork to run for president, heavy fighting reported in the Ukraine, and the FBI director faces a contempt of Congress hearing.
I'm Dan Schwartzman with Global News.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia, the business news you need to start your day in just one 15-minute podcast. Available on Apple, Spotify, the Bloomberg Business app, and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. I'm Doug Krisner.
And I'm Brian Curtis. Here are the stories we're following today. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has accused Binance and its CEO, Changpeng Zhao, of breaking securities rules. The SEC alleged that Zhao and Binance mishandled customer funds and misled investors and regulators. Among the allegations, the SEC said that two Binance-linked tokens, BNB and BUSD, were securities that the firm improperly offered and sold. The regulator also alleged that Binance and its U.S. affiliate were not actually independent from one another and improperly functioned as an exchange. We heard from Bloomberg's Lydia Bayoud.
The U.S. entity of Binance, which has long claimed that it walls off U.S. customers from accessing the international site, you know, the SEC seems to be alleging that that was not, in fact, the case or that controls weren't sufficient.
Binance called the SEC complaint disappointing, saying it had engaged with the regulator in good faith negotiations to settle the matter. The crypto exchange also said that the SEC was misguided in not providing clarity over rules for digital assets. And we did see cryptos take a hit. Bitcoin traded down to 25,000 and change. At the moment, it has ticked up 0.2% to 25,688.
Well, U.S. regulators have a plan to fortify the U.S. financial system. Large U.S. banks may have to boost their capital by an average of 20%. We have more from Bloomberg's Ann Cates.
Bank regulators are considering new rules after several smaller regional lenders collapsed earlier this year. That means a broader swath of banks would face strict requirements for setting money aside under a draft plan designed to bolster the U.S. financial system. Specific increases would depend on a lender's business model, and banks with at least $100 billion in assets may have to adhere to the regulation. A trade group that represents major financial institutions says the proposal would burden businesses and borrowers and hamper the economy. In Washington, Ann Cates, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
Well, we mentioned it was a big day for Apple. Let me say first that Apple stock did trade down a little bit, but more or less in line with what we saw in the marketplace, off about 0.75%. The big day announcing the long-awaited mixed reality headset at the Worldwide Developers Conference, and also some other new products and updates. Bloomberg's Tom Busby has more.
After more than 7 years of development, Apple finally unveiled the Apple Vision Pro, a $3,500 mixed reality headset. It'll be available next year. It's Apple's first totally new hardware product since the Apple Watch made its debut about 8 years ago, seen by some as a successor to its wildly popular iPhone in terms of future revenue. The company also announced a new 15-inch MacBook Air laptop, as well as updated software and features for the iPad and the iPhone. But investors didn't seem all that impressed on Monday, sending shares of Apple down 0.75%. Tom Busby, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
Well, as I mentioned a short while ago, decision day for the Reserve Bank of Australia, and economists and money markets seem to be divided on which way the RBA will go. Today's decision, 2:30 p.m. Sydney time, and we have a preview now from Bloomberg's Paul Allen.
One third of the 30 economists surveyed by Bloomberg expect the RBA will raise its cash rate to 4.1%. The majority, including the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, anticipate it will stand pat at 3.85%. and traders are pricing in about 50-50 odds. Last month, Governor Philip Lowe took RBA watchers by surprise when he unexpectedly hiked interest rates following a pause in April. His rhetoric, however, has recently turned more hawkish as he weighs renewed price pressures against a slowing economy. Last week, Lowe said that the RBA board will do whatever is necessary to bring consumer price gains back down to the central bank's 2-3% target. The RBA's own forecasts show inflation only returning to the top of its target in mid-2025. I'm Paul Allen, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
The Australian dollar pretty steady here this morning, 66.19 U.S. cents, but up from yesterday. Well, Evergrande Group's property management unit has posted a profit for 2022. Bloomberg's Joanne Wong has more from Hong Kong.
Evergrande Property Services saw a net income of 1.42 billion yuan, or about 200 million U.S. dollars in 2022. That's an improvement over a loss in 2021, according to a delayed earnings report. But profit was far less than an estimate of 3.8 billion yuan. The disclosure is a key milestone toward the lifting of a stock trading suspension. The suspension has been in place for more than a year. If the ban were to be lifted, it would help creditors work out the merits of a restructuring of debt. Evergrande has offered to swap debt for equity as part of the overhaul. But in order for the ban to be lifted, Evergrande still needs to show that there are no reasonable regulatory concerns on management integrity. That's hanging in the balance. In Hong Kong, I'm Joanne Wong, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
And Doug, some other developments we'll be taking a look at this morning. This may disappoint some investors. China is sticking with targeted steps to help the economy instead of any broad measures. They'll be looking at property and manufacturing. It suggests that at least for the moment, the broader stimulus like interest rate cuts seem to be off the table. And there was an interesting quote from Zhi Xiaojia at Credit Agricole saying that Chinese officials are eyeing more quality of growth, not just the pace of the expansion.
Yeah, it's kind of an exercise in surgery, isn't it? Where you really get in and you become much more specific and targeted about the areas in which you'd like to see the economy do better. One of the things that I was struck by, Brian, if you look at this services PMI that we had today, and coupled with the fact that manufacturing PMI last week showing contraction for a seventh straight month, we seem to be in a world where some PMIs, particularly in Asia, are improving a little bit, but it seems to be a different story here in the U.S. I wonder what that says about global growth right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that you point that out. I was looking at the ISM number there, and it's just barely in expansion. And we had the Caixin services yesterday, which doesn't get a lot of coverage because it comes after the official PMIs. But it was up to 57.1 in May, and that's higher than what we saw, 56.4 the month before. And it was also stronger than the survey estimate. So even though we're thinking of a stumbling recovery in China, the services number was pretty strong.
So, and if you believe what the consensus call is for the Fed to hold rates steady next week, keep it options open, maybe, for hikes later this year. Bloomberg Economics right now says when you take everything into consideration, we're looking at a recession before the end of the year is out.
Yeah, we'll put that question to James Abate. He's coming up, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer at Center Asset Management, one of our favorite guests here on the program. Well, we love them all, but James definitely is a standout. Now it's time for Global News. Well, let's take a closer look here at some of the top stories. We've got Dan Schwartzman in the Bloomberg newsroom. Dan.
Hey, Brian. Tensions remaining high between the U.S. and China. Two recent incidents highlighting that tension as a Chinese warship sailed in front of a U.S. destroyer, missing the ship by about 150 yards, while a Chinese jet recently crossed in front of an American spy plane over international waters. U.S. National Security Council Coordinator John Kirby talking about the incidents.
These are part and parcel of an increasing level of aggressiveness by the PLA, the PRC's military, in particularly in the area of the Taiwan Straits and in the South China Sea.
Kirby was speaking at the White House. Former Vice President Mike Pence has filed the necessary paperwork to run for president. President Trump's former VP joining a field that continues to get more crowded as former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum are expected to announce this week. One name that has decided not to run is New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu. A House committee will vote on a contempt of Congress resolution against FBI Director Christopher Wray on Thursday. The move comes after Wray did not comply with a subpoena for a document held by the FBI The Republicans say links President Biden to a $5 million bribery scheme with an unnamed foreign national. The FBI says it produced a document in a reading room at the Capitol. New details emerging regarding the private plane entering restricted airspace over Washington yesterday before crashing in Montebello, Virginia, with four fatalities. Bloomberg's Nancy Lyons with more.
The incident prompted F-16 fighter jets to scramble to see why the plane was in restricted airspace. They discovered the pilot was unconscious. Adam Gerhart with the National Transportation Safety Board says there are plenty of unanswered questions.
When exactly did the pilot become unresponsive? And why did the airplane fly the flight track that it did fly?
The plane eventually crashed near Stanton, Virginia, and Gerhart says the wreckage is scattered and in mountainous terrain, making for a tough recovery.
Thanks, Nancy. An ongoing hacking campaign has claimed British Airways, pharmacy chain Boots, and the BBC as victims. The payroll provider to those companies, Zealous, says a cyber attack may have compromised personal information of thousands of employees of those companies. The government in Nova Scotia, Canada, has also been named a victim in this scheme, with potentially thousands of companies still vulnerable to be compromised as well. California state leaders are blasting Florida governor and Republican presidential hopeful Ron DeSantis. The anger stems from two flights of migrants from New Mexico to Sacramento that were sent there allegedly at the direction of Florida officials. California Governor Gavin Newsom has hinted that the state could pursue criminal charges against DeSantis for the moves. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in over 120 countries. I'm Dan Schwartzman, and this is Bloomberg.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing. The passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm Brian Curtis in Hong Kong, along with Rashad Salamat. Our guest is James Abate, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer, Center Asset Management. So a little bit of weak data there today, but the data has been mixed of late. There's been a few things that were stronger than expected. How do you see the Fed moving at this month's meeting, James?
Well, I think if you look, and really during the entire cycle, the one-year Treasury yield has led the Fed funds rate over this entire period. And similar to the peak of the rate cycle tops in 2000-2006, right now we see the Fed funds rate trading at about 50 basis points premium above the one-year Treasury note. And that's the widest we've seen of this cycle. And each time that's occurred, that has indicated that the Fed be on hold. And as we've always said, we think that, you know, the Fed's target here during this entire cycle was to raise the real Fed funds rate, that's the Fed funds rate minus inflation, to positive territory. And if you look at tips, whether it's 5 years or out through 10 years, they're around 1.5% positive. So I think the Fed could say mission accomplished in terms of the hiking cycle, but they will definitely wait for inflation to subside further before, I think, moving again. But they will basically pause, I think, at the upcoming meeting.
Well, I mean, they should. Don't you think here, James?
Absolutely, because what you see is, you know, inflation figures coming down in goods. If you look at commodity prices today, even with the very positive news with regard to Saudi Arabia cutting supply of oil, oil prices and industrial commodity prices were relatively muted. What that tells you is that there's a demand problem, and that indicates some kind of cyclical downturn. And perhaps if you think about where inflation has been embedded in the last few months, it's been in the services sector. And to the extent that the ISM services figure came in today at around 50, you know, indicating no longer expansion and less pricing pressure in the services sector, I think it gives the Fed the opportunity to really pause here at this point in time.
Well, certainly with all these T-bills, which are going to be coming to the market as well. I mean, we're talking a veritable tsunami, you know, nearly $1 trillion worth. Now, my point here is also that's going to suck liquidity out of the system. That's number one. Number two, who's going to buy them?
Well, I think you'll see the banks and pension funds continue to be buyers, particularly as we saw an announcement of a potential raise in capital requirements for banks. Banks have been the most, you know, voracious buyers of treasury bills and bonds over this period of time since the Fed has launched quantitative easing, and even during the current period of time. So you're still going to see very healthy demand for, particularly at these types of yields, from the major institutions in the financial services sector, insurance, banking, et cetera.
You noted the slowing, but what was unusual was at the end of last week, we had a real bounce in cyclical stocks, as though people might give the NASDAQ 100 stocks a little bit of a pause and pile into the more equal weight companies. But it seems to run counter to that slowing economy that you mentioned.
Yeah, it does. And I think one of the most frustrating things for, you know, active managers is that what we have witnessed thus far is, you know, the dominance of cap-weighted indices against equal-weighted indices. It is frankly unheard of if you're thinking about this being a new bull market. You know, if you look at any beginning of a bull market, whether it goes back to even 1990, 2002, 2009, 2020, equal-weighted has always outperformed cap-weighted. I think that's consistent with what we're seeing in the sense that people are gravitating towards higher quality, larger companies, because we're still in the phase where profits are decelerating, sales growth is decelerating, the outlook is kind of deteriorating, but not at an expedited manner. So people want to gravitate towards quality. We're nowhere near the bottom of the economic cycle or the profit cycle, which is why, you know, it's been an environment where quality and larger cap companies, as demonstrated by the differential between cap-weighted and equal-weighted indices, have shown.
Well, I just want to ask, you know, the second part of my question was, of course, about liquidity. And I just want to ask, how much do you think the Fed is cognizant of the way that credit has tightened and how that's doing their job for them partly?
Yeah, I think that's the other thing to look at in the fixed income world, and probably more important. It's not so much what the Fed funds rate is doing, but to look at the spreads. And right now, we've actually seen for the first time, you know, a noticeable uptick in junk bond yields. This has been, you know, quite significant. It's nowhere near the levels that we saw back in the global financial crisis or even back in 2000. But the Fed has to be well aware that the risk off and the spike in junk bond and even investment grade bonds has been quite dramatic and something to be another notch to basically give them some caution here to let it play out.
We don't often talk extensively about China, but we can do for a moment or two. I think some investors may be looking for more stimulus from authorities in China, but it seems that they want to stick with the targeted approach. It's a mixed environment there in much the same way it's mixed in the U.S. So would you deploy capital to China at this juncture?
It's been very frustrating, you know, in our global infrastructure fund and other global investments that we manage. You know, China, whether it's via Hong Kong or onshore, has been, you know, a continuing source of frustration and continues to stay in a trading range. You know, we seem to continue, and it was touched upon in the news segment, of having this uneven recovery globally. And a lot of it has to do with when individual economies unleashed or allowed COVID restrictions to come off. And that's what makes this cycle so difficult to navigate, whether it's here in the United States or in China, is to somehow reconcile a historical business cycle, stock market cycle, to the very unusual set of circumstances, both in terms of the drop in economic activity and the extraordinary stimulus following COVID, which was really a very short period of time ago. And I'm almost of the belief that we have to kind of, you know, think about this cycle within a longer period of time. This is not a very specific set of quarters to look at, but look back and somehow blend the COVID environment to this current cycle to somehow give a better picture to compare it to other periods of time.
Well, this is it, isn't it? The base effects of, you would have thought, would have been flattering the economic data coming out of China of late. But no, not really. It's actually just highlighted how perhaps things are looking bad. But then again, you look at the market there, and it's incredibly good in terms of valuations being inexpensive. And I think it was Bank of America which came up with a great line, which was China's too cheap to short and too mediocre to go long.
Yeah, that being said, you know, one of the biggest dangers that or traps that value investors fall into is buying low PE companies just before the E disappears and they become, you know, PE, which are incalculable because there's no earnings. The fact is, China's market is much more cyclical than the United States. You know, what we've seen, particularly with the offshoring over the past couple of decades, is the inventory and capital intensity cycles that used to be resident here in the United States and Europe have been basically imported into China. So that capital cyclicality, you know, gives operating leverage a much kind of larger standard deviation. So if indeed the global economy is starting to slow down and U.S. consumers in particular are going to slow down, that's going to have a significant impact on China's manufacturing capabilities and productivity and utilization rates. And you'll see, you know, companies that are earning in very low PE attractiveness from a optical perspective go to loss making, which will basically make that valuation seem, you know, not so appealing.
James, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it. James Abate, Managing Director, Chief Investment Officer, Center Asset Management. This is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia, your morning brief on the stories making news from Hong Kong to Singapore and Wall Street.
Look for us on your podcast feed every day on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each day on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, Bloomberg 99.1 in Washington, Bloomberg 1061 in Boston, and Bloomberg 960 in San Francisco.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Plus, listen coast to coast on the Bloomberg Business app, SiriusXM Channel 119, the iHeartRadio app, and on Bloomberg.com. I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Doug Krisner. Join us again tomorrow for all the news you need to start your day right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.